Risky Business.
Risky Business.
Risky Business.
Risky Business.
Hello and welcome to this special weekend listening edition of Risky Business here on itradio.com.au. I'm Patrick Gray. This special presentation is brought to you by Message Labs. Now, if you're a regular listener to this program, you'll know that I headed off to the KiwiCon security conference in New Zealand a couple of weekends ago at Victoria University in Wellington. And there were presentations, lots of free beer, and of course, this presentation by security consultant and researcher Paul Craig. Paul works for securityassessment.com in New Zealand, and he delivered by far the most entertaining presentation at the conference. It was called the Paul Craig Omnibus Experience because he mashed three separate talks into one, which I've edited down into one fine hour of listening for your enjoyment this weekend. Now, the first talk is about ICAT, the Interactive Kiosk Attack Tool. ICAT was unveiled officially by Paul at the most recent DEF CON conference in Las Vegas. It's basically a website that you can visit from internet kiosks, like you find in corporate lobbies or in airports. Now, of course, when you visit the ICAT website from a kiosk, you can start clicking on things and popping shells. Paul released ICAT to get people thinking. So many people pump all sorts of sensitive information into the average kiosk, as you'll hear. But since the release of ICAT, we know now for sure that they're not safe. So, thanks, Paul? That's the first part of his talk, and it's a lot of fun. As you'll hear, Paul has a healthy sense of humour and does really well in front of a crowd. In the second part of the Omnibus experience, Paul discusses his hobby, which is stealing data from botnets. In all, Paul managed to boost 3.3 gigabytes of plain text logs that had been intercepted by a fairly unsophisticated keylogging Trojan. The resulting findings, as you'll hear, are actually quite hilarious. And last up, he unveils the Moth Trojan. Listeners to our most recent podcast would have heard a little bit about this. Moth uses native Windows functionality to subvert the operating system. Not only does it allow full remote access to the affected host, but it actually insults the user through Microsoft's text-to-speech function. It is absolutely classic stuff. Now, you would have heard an interview I did with McLennan Starkey from OSCERT about this. Macca says detecting this thing is actually pretty easy. Now, while Macca has come up with some fairly nifty detection techniques, which are actually quite simple, I think the jury's still out on how effective Paul's techniques are. Because the Trojan is so customizable, the Trojan methodology is so customizable and allows such an amazing level of control over the infected system, I reckon it'll be a real challenge to get rid of certain variants of this thing. Anyway, have a listen to Paul's talk and make up your own mind. I've linked to Paul's website where you can download the source code to Moth, and I've also linked to Macca's write-up on the Trojan itself. Now, this special podcast is sponsored by Message Labs, so before we play Paul's talk, there's a 30-second message they'd love for you all to hear.
Sick of running web filtering on your gateway? Sick of legitimate sites being blocked by overzealous web filters? Do your users whinge? Message Labs Web Security Services filters the badness out of your web feed in the cloud, intercepting web-borne threats before they get anywhere near your network. Plus, our web usage reports track users by bandwidth and URLs visited, so IT can budget for web usage costs by department. Let web filtering be our problem, not yours. Find out more at messagelabs.com.au.
And that's it for the ads. Thanks a lot to Message Labs for making this show possible. And here it is. I am pleased to present to you the Paul Craig Omnibus Experience as presented to the KiwiCon Security Conference about 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so yes, I am of course Paul Craig, or someone who looks very similar to Paul Craig, and this is the Paul Craig Omnibus, all ninja all the time. It's going to be a relatively sort of jam-packed session. I got a bunch of different topics I'm going to talk about. Now the break is after this, so I'm just going to keep going, and if you guys get bored, you want to eat or something, just f*** off and go, but I imagine you'll be entertained, I promise. Okay, so who am I? I'm Paul Craig, I'm a principal security consultant at securityassessment.com, like a lot of other people here. I work as an application penetration tester, I'm a published security author, an active security researcher, and I'm a devoted hacker. If you have any feedback or comments regarding this presentation, you're welcome to send me an email, paul@ha.ckd.net, or just buy me a beer afterwards and have a chat. Okay, so what is the Paul Craig Omnibus experience? Well, I actually have three topics I'm going to talk about. Firstly, I want to cover off a topic that I released last year at KiwiCon 2007. This was, of course, ICAT, the Interactive Kiosk Attack Tool. I've been actively developing ICAT for the last 12 months. And I want to show you guys some of the cool tricks, the people using ICAT, and sort of give you a bit of an update. Then I'm going to talk about a little hobby I've had. It's been stealing information from botnets. I've been raping and pillaging the world, and it's going pretty good. And I'm going to show you basically what I stole, how I stole it, and what I managed to do. And then finally, as the KiwiCon exclusive, I'll be releasing the Moth Trojan. I guarantee this will be the most amazing Trojan / rootkit you have ever seen in your life. Yeah? That's a pretty big claim, right? It works on XP Vista. It's completely original technique, and it's pure ode. No one knows about this but me, and soon to be you. And of course, full source code will also be released afterwards. Okay, so ICAT, the Interactive Kiosk Attack Tool. You may remember last year I showed you how you could hack a lot of kiosks in less than 60 seconds. So last month I went to DEF CON and I officially released ICAT. I spent the last about 12, 10 months working on it, trying to make it super, super, super. When I landed in Vegas, I realized that the kiosk that's most deployed everywhere in Vegas was one of the platforms I targeted my tool against. Basically, ICAT could pop a shell on any internet kiosk in Vegas in less than 7 seconds. That was pretty cool. However, in my talk at DEF CON, I made the mistake of pointing this out. So the picture just there, that's the kiosk at the Riviera. And about a minute after my talk, the kiosk was on. The kiosk then had to be, like, the IT people came in, they fixed the kiosk, then the kiosk got owned again. then again. And then the cops were called. And the police were standing around the kiosks, stopping people from using their cell phones. They were taking photos, and they assumed, wow, their cell phones are hacking the kiosk. So I thought that was kind of funny. There are actually heaps and heaps of kiosks got owned in Vegas. ICAT now detects and supports all popular commercial kiosk products. I've pretty much got the Windows kiosk range absolutely covered. It has improved functionality and lots of auto-hacking buttons. The idea being, you click a button, lots of shit happens in the background, you get shells. In fact, you can pop up 20 or 30 shells really, really fast. So it's really trying for like rapid succession of hacking. I also added a feature called Submit Your Ownage. The idea behind this is that I have ICAT on Google Maps. So if you hack somewhere cool and you want to tell the world about it, you can plot your little point and show the world how much of a good hacker you are. It's also full of kiosk and browser plugin ode. It has lots and lots of tricks. And yeah, some vendors weren't too happy about that. It works really well. I'm really, really very proud of ICAT. So I'm going to be releasing ICAT version 1.1 next month at my next con jaunt. But I'm going to go to a Hack in the Box Malaysia and then hack.lu. Now, ICAT 1.1 is going to include full support for non-Windows-based kiosks. Now, the reason behind this is that I've had all of these kiosk vendors that develop Linux kiosks email me and say, oh, now your tool's got nothing. You're focusing on Windows. You know, you can't hack me. Bull fucking shit, I can't. So I've gone out and I've hacked all the Linux kiosks and I'm going to integrate support in. I'm also going to be releasing ICAT Portable. So the idea behind this is that I'm getting really sick and tired of wgetting my entire site to mirror it. So I'm going to give you it. I'm going to give you the source to all my tools, the source to absolutely everything, including the website, so you can host your own version. Because I've found that now some airports are actually blocking the URL that ICAT sits on. So you can host your own version. Maybe have it on a USB key. If you're a pen tester, it's a pretty handy thing to have if you want to do some security testing. Now, ICAT version 1.0 is available online at this URL, icat.ha.ckd.net. Just go to that URL. It's relatively self-explanatory. Start clicking, shell stop popping. Okay, so who's been using ICAT since I released it? This was the most interesting thing because it's like an online tool. I can look at all the logs. I can get all the source IP addresses. So I've had 14,000 plus unique hits. 10 to 15% of those have been from kiosks. So that's actually quite a few kiosks that got hacked using this tool, which is kind of good. ICAT's being used by the security scene, by governments, by banks, and by kiosk vendors. So reception.sitekiosk.com, one of the biggest users of ICAT. That's pretty good to see. There's two kiosks at Boston University. They got owned. There's a kiosk at Seattle Airport. That got owned. The Johnson Space Center, NASA. It appeared to be a kiosk. It had a user agent that looked like a kiosk. So it looked like someone hacked a kiosk at JSC. Oh, it's kind of cool. Strangely enough, Army.Pentagon, Army.mil, Defense.gov, Juniper. So Security Lab 1, Juniper. Wow, that's kind of cool. Are the security researchers looking into this? Core Security, the guys who make Core Impact. Deloitte in America and Deloitte in Holland, and the Ministry of Defense in England. And I've been getting heaps of positive feedback from my friends, people who know me, usually in the form of a text message saying, hey man, I'm at such and such airport, and I just own the kiosk. And that's the most awesomest thing ever. It's really good to get positive feedback. So I highly encourage you to play with the tool and let me know what you managed to do with it. Okay, so who got owned? My head is always full of ideas. I'm always trying to think about things in security, and I try and approach things from a bit of a different angle and research at it, and sort of learn something new. And I was very intrigued by botnets. There's always a lot of media attention from botnets, and it's kind of like the big hype these days, right? So botnets are, of course, networks of compromised zombie machines, right? Where each zombie is usually used to relay IP traffic, such as send spam out, denial of service, maybe host malicious content. And also personal information on the zombie host is stolen and often sold. So these are things like your credit card number, your bank accounts, your social security numbers, and your email accounts. There are a lot of people in this world that make really good money, apparently, selling this type of information. So yeah, the media portrays this thriving black market, that this is, you know, these underground criminals making heaps of money, and this is a, you know, real growth industry. However, I have a lot of questions about this. I actually want to know what type of personal information really gets stolen. All the information that the media seem to release is relatively one-sided. It's always from the external point of view. They always say things like, oh, you know, we've got this massive botnet, and it's, you know, it's spreading really fast, and everyone's being infected. But they never tell me really anything juicy. I want to know if the situation really is bad as the media makes out. You know, are we really under threat, or is this just sort of fear-mongering? You know, is the media trying to make us scared into buying AV software? I also want to know, what type of user gets infected? Are we talking about 10-year-old kids? You know, are botnets full of teenagers? Or is it NASA, government, and defense contractors? That's kind of different, you know? Like, and also, is selling personal information really that profitable? Like, are people making billions of dollars out of this? Millions? Hundreds? Thousands? And, yeah, I could find very few worthwhile statistics released from the media. If anyone knows anything interesting or any good statistics released, tell me, because, yeah, there doesn't seem to be a whole lot out there. So, yeah, my questions require knowledge from inside a botnet. You know, the statistics are always externally focused, the size, the growth, the spread, suspected, unproven links to organized crime. The facts that the media often reports are usually based on entirely on, like, speculation and rumor. They just sort of guess. I mean, you get so many contradicting terms from different media organizations that, yeah, I really wasn't very satisfied. So I thought to myself, I should really find out more. You know, I'm a security professional. I need to know about this. Only I want to know more information than most people really want to know. I want to know who gets owned. I want their name. I want their phone number, and I want their address. I want to know if any government agencies get owned. If they do, I want their name, their phone number, their address, their photo. I want to know how big this problem is, or how bad this problem is. And I also want to know what country gets owned the most. Like, is New Zealand a big, insecure country, or a very insecure country? Is America? What's the country? How does New Zealand rank up against things? However, getting this information really requires I have a botnet. Now, I'm a professional security researcher and principal security consultant. I really can't just go out and write a botnet and start, you know, I just can't do that. This would not work. It would be f***ing awesome if I did. I would write the most amazing one ever, but yeah. So I thought to myself, well, you know, shit, I'm a professional hacker. Why don't I just hack a botnet? Like, ooh, that sounds pretty doable. Because, well, the hacker's less likely to press legal action against me. That's a good thing. So I mean, hey, I'm stealing from a thief. I mean, what are you going to do? And I also only have to hack one person, not thousands. So I don't have to develop software that's going to, you know, own the world. I just got to hack this one kid somewhere. So my ethics also remain in question. I'm not going to have issues sleeping at night thinking, oh, no, I ripped off, you know, some kid in Russia. It's, ah, that's right. And also, someone else does all the hard work. That's really the beauty of this, because I don't actually have much time. I can't sit around and spend months and months, you know, owning the world. I just wanted to own one person and get all their tricks. And yeah, I had this huge potential to gain very valuable information. I thought, well, shit, I could probably learn so much from this. I should really do it. So, now, most modern botnets are actually controlled via the web these days. They're actually very, very easy and quite simple. You get PHP or Perl web applications that you basically click to manage your zombies. You get all these zombies that come into your botnet, and you can like select all the IP addresses and say, start sending spam, or start denial of servicing this dude, or give me all your credit cards. So I thought, well, that's cool. I review source code for a living. I'll just hack the botnet master web application. So I performed source code analysis of four popular botnet server applications. And I didn't find any vulnerabilities as an unauthenticated user. Once I authenticate, then I win. You know, I have all sorts of bugs and exploits that would allow me to further compromise the server. But if I have the credentials to authenticate, then I get full control anyway. So it's like, ah, crap, you know, I don't really have anything here. Only the vulnerabilities were only present after authentication. And surprisingly, a lot of these applications were written very simply and often very securely. I guess these guys probably are targets from a lot of script kiddies, people who just want to like steal control and, you know, do something nice and easy, sort of the way I was thinking. So these things are not horribly written. Then came a very timely email. I think face and karma and things work in very strange ways. And about a week later, I got this email from the Symantec Security Response Center saying that there's a new malicious keylogger circulating. I was like, ooh, keylogger, yeah. It was a malicious browser helper object, so that's an Internet Explorer plugin. And basically, all user browser activity was being monitored. And any web requests were being recorded and sent back to a master server. And also, all of the IE protected storage, these are the IE saved passwords, were being recorded and sent up to this master server. So this was a targeted information stealing Trojan / botnet thing. It was designed to steal personal information. So my guess was that this information was probably being unsold somewhere. So I was like, wow, this is exactly what I'm looking for. This is it. Now this is a really, really good Trojan, because this Trojan is really f***ing lame. Because the remote master server of this particular Trojan, all of the logs that the zombies send back get stored under /logs on this server, directory777.com. And you can see it's also cached by Google. So all the information from all these zombies is now fully available on the internet for anyone to take. Oh yeah, that's what I want. That's perfect, right? I get my information, I get a look inside a botnet. I don't even have to hack it. I don't have to do anything. I just have to wget some stuff. So I downloaded 200 meg of zombie HTTP requests. I got webmail, I got Facebook accounts, Bebo, bank accounts, credit cards. I got absolutely everything. I got a snippet of people doing things online, day-to-day stuff. Things like checking your mail, checking the TV, see what's on, maybe writing an email to your mom, checking all these random crap people do, just heaps and heaps of it. I was like, wow, this is really good. I want more. I want lots and lots more. So I thought to myself, well, are there any more sites like this? I mean, maybe this really dumb hacker has deployed this everywhere. So I used the Google hacking trick of using Google to find other instances of this Trojan. So using the Google query in-text keys read file type text, you can search for all log files that Google may have cached that contain this keys read value. Now, keys read was being appended into all of the log files for any keystrokes that were recorded, and it appeared to be a relatively unique string. However, there was only one site in Google. So I'm like, Then I realized, well, maybe one will pop up later. So I checked every day. I set my homepage to the Google search of in-text keys read file type text. So every morning when I turn on my computer, Firefox would pop up and I would check. And I didn't really have to do anything. I didn't need to like write any code, or it just sort of told me if anything popped up. And about 2 months later, this other site popped up. advertisingspace24.com/log. You notice a trend. The first site was directory 777. This one is advertisingspace24. It's the same guy, same Trojan. It's just redeployed somewhere else. So, all the zombie information was again stored as text files under /logs, and this time I looted 450 meg. I was like, now I'm getting somewhere. So, 9 months later, I raped and pillaged 6 of these botnets, all with directory listings and logs enabled. I think it was 2 or 3 different hackers that were deploying these, but all of them with the same, bad configuration, bad setup. I mean, this thing was really, really lame. However, I stole a total of 3.3 gig of information from people like people in this room, people doing things online. So that's 62.5 million lines of text. So I got a fair amount of information out of this. Now, each Trojan instance was infecting 4,000 to 5,000 users. You can see that infect stats up there. That was one of the bugs I found. There was a page inside, page inside the web app that allowed me to see how many people had been infected without requiring any authentication to log in. So the delivery method was actually quite unknown. I don't know how this guy was spreading his Trojan or really how he was doing this. It was a very unintelligent botnet. I mean, this is crap, totally. And it was very unimaginative. I mean, yeah. However, this guy had really good success. So, I mean, I can see all the stuff that he was collecting, and he got a fair amount. So, what did I get? So, I got 6,897 HTTP requests containing usernames and passwords. I got 1,940 protected storage credentials, 228 webmail messages, and a goldmine of valuable information. Like my friend here who likes shemale porn. Now, as you can see that from that example request, each request contains the time and a date stamp. All HTTP requests, even if HTTPS was used, this is because the Trojan acts as a malicious browser helper object, so it's actually intercepting the data as you type it and press enter. The communication protocol, the transport protocol, doesn't really have anything to do with this. HTTPS does not save you. And I also got the source IP address of each zombie, along with a unique zombie ID, all from these log files. So, in more detail. So what was in these logs? I found my biggest problem was actually parsing 3.3 gig of this arbitrary sort of textual data. You know, it maybe took me a few hours to steal all this data, but it took me many days to parse it and to sort of rip out useful information. Because there's just so much crap in it. You wouldn't believe how many web requests you generate when you surf the web or when you pretty much do anything. So I wrote some log analysis software which basically profiled or flagged any HTTP request which matched a specific profile. So any request which contained a username or password like variable, I stored it, I saved it away. Anything containing a mod 10 number, mod 10 are of course credit card numbers. Any saved protected storage values, and also any requests made to interesting domains. I was curious, or I wanted to find if there were any defense, government, political, or highly commercial users inside this botnet. If so, where were they going, and what information did I steal from them? So, cut to the chase. Government military authentication details. These were all the governments that I own, or the governments that I have accounts to. You'll see health.vic.gov.au. I got Brazilian governments, I got Malaysian, I got Turkish. An interesting one here is the Venezuelan Senate. I have a username and password to log into the Senate where you... I haven't actually logged in, but I assume you can view like minutes and things coming out of the Senate. I also got an account to navyreserve.navy.mil, webmail.us.army, akocac.us.army, and wmlogin.us.army. Do we have anyone from the US Army in the audience today? Cool. Apparently someone did register, so either someone's being a bit sly or... No. What about bank accounts? So here's 52 bank accounts. I got 109 in total. I have a bank account in at least one of every major bank in the world. I have banks in Hong Kong. I got banks in Brazil. I got banks in Russia, Turkey, England. I got America. I got Chase Manhattan. I got PayPal. I got Israeli. I got South African. I got a couple in New Zealand. I got... US Bank, more Russia, more England, Commerce Online, heaps and heaps and heaps of bank accounts.
How long have you put this in the cache?
How was it?
How long does Google tend to keep all these in their cache?
I'll get to that. My research has motivated Google in some respects, I think. So yeah, I was absolutely flabbergasted by the amount of bank accounts I got. I didn't think it would be this easy. I guess I was maybe a little naive, but yeah, this was nuts. Just actually on that point, if anyone gives me your bank account number, I can tell you your name. Okay, what about Bebo accounts? I got 102 Bebo accounts. These are some of the people that were in the botnet. I didn't actually really know what Bebo was until I sort of did this. And I found out that it's basically for kind of like prepubescent teens to sort of talk about, yeah, things that they talk about. Really, really, really strange, but it's good to see some faces, you know. Yeah, I kind of got kicks out of that. Heaps and heaps of social networking accounts. About Facebook, I got 142 Facebook accounts. This is kind of cool. I like friends. You know, this can work for me. What about perhaps something more adult? I got 35 adult friend finder accounts. I got 21 swinger-related websites. Meet my friend here, Pudgy For You. She's owned. So yeah, more and more accounts. I had so many accounts to so many different servers and services that the problem was really picking the server or the website that I wanted an account for so I could search for it, because I had so much f***ing data. Okay, now track a user. Since each request contains the originating zombie IP address, I can track zombies who access interesting places, like webmail.us.army.mil. That's pretty interesting. I wonder what army people do on their desktops. So this particular person, well, there's an ADSL IP address, a Bell South. Now, the first thing this person did was actually check TV planner. Well, that's not very interesting. And you can see they have text key logged 808. I think it's like maybe an area code or channel maybe or something that they're looking at. Then they go into, they check the weather. You see they go to forecast.weather.gov and they have input string equal Georgia. So maybe our soldier dude lives in Georgia. Okay, we're starting to learn some information about this. And then he goes to YouTube and searches for woodworking videos. Well, that's a pretty army thing, right? I mean, yeah, make me some, build me something. So I think, man, I wonder if this guy's going to do something interesting. Oh, how about checking into his Yahoo webmail? Oh, yeah, so we got username and a password there. I've tried to blank out any really sensitive information in this talk, so obviously people aren't placed at undue risk. But this guy actually had a pretty poor password. Now, his email address was Latonyatian? Something like that. So I was trying to work out, like, what is that your name? Is your name Laton? Laton? Okay, and then I noticed this really cracked me up. So after this person logged into their Yahoo mail, they clicked a link to go to myreport.gofreecredit.com, which is a free credit check that probably came in a spam email. I was thinking, oh, shit, man, this is probably the reason you got infected to begin with. And this got really interesting, though, because this gave me full name, address, phone, and the state. So this is Latoyana Bradford. And there's the email address, the area code, phone number, please don't call them up, the address, city, and the state code. So we know this is Mr. Latoyana Bradford has been infected. Then they went to us.army.mil and registered an account for Army Knowledge Online. And here we actually find out that title equals MERS. It's a check. It's Miss Latoyana Bradford. And from this request, we also get her Army Social Security number. That's kind of interesting. And the Army sponsor. So this was Antonio Bradford I. Maybe this is a father or a brother or a husband or some relation who's also in the Army, since this is an Army sponsor. Now, the email account that she used to register for this, latoyana@yahoo.com, we already know that password. We have her Yahoo account. So that's, you know, kind of handy. Now, the registration continues. She sets a username and a password, and then three last password question answers. And they were relatively, like, personal information. I was thinking, ooh, wonder where else you use these. I bet you use them somewhere else. I bet I've just compromised how many Army resources, maybe other things. Of course, I couldn't test these things and prove my theory, but I reckon I'm right. And also, this person goes by nickname, Tyann. So there's a wealth of information starting to appear. I really started getting some kicks by just searching through my log files and seeing who these people are. Because you don't really think of infected people or infected users or zombies as people. In the security world, they're just kind of like an infected host or a malicious IP address. But to actually get a face or a...
Yeah,
so I was starting to have a real good time with this. Now, the logs were full of everyday people doing really everyday things. So this guy, Eric Mahala, he's booking a hotel. He lives in Belgium. He went away on holiday in March. He traveled by himself. He does not smoke. He has a visa. It's not expired yet. No, thanks for the CVC, Eric. That really helps. Lucky he used HTTPS, though. Or maybe not. We have his email address and everything about him. Also, Alyssa Searcy. She's going away. She's flying Southwest Airlines. She lives at 7748 Spanner Road, Jacksonville, Florida. And she also has a visa. And I thought to myself at this point, man, I wonder how many visas I have. Anyone want to guess? Okay, so I got 214 with complete billing details, CV2 and CVC. So that's not bad. I mean, with the CV2 and CVC information, you have a wealth of attacks possible. And hopefully I've blacked out everyone's credit card number. And hundreds of webmail conversations. Hundreds and hundreds of webmail conversations. The really interesting one is on the right. Louise.nixon at spss.pnn.police.uk. We got BT Connect. It looks like a person in their help desk or their technical support center has been infected. Angus Scott at Euroyachts. Heaps of Russian, Ukrainian, and weird languages that I can't read. But basically lots and lots of people writing emails to other people. And that was actually also quite amusing, just reading people's emails. Yeah, I don't know. There's something about it that just makes you feel good. Maybe it's a hacker thing. I don't know. Even hackers got owned. This I found really f***ing funny. So I was looking for like different hacking groups or different hacking things. I found I have a Hack Turkiye account, which is a Hack Turkey. It's a relatively big Turkish hacking group. 26-year-old guy, NN Scorpion, otherwise known as Martin N. And we have his username and his password and his MyNet page and his YouTube page and, oh yeah, all his usernames and accounts. So I thought that was kind of a bit interesting. I wouldn't have thought someone, I thought infected users were, you know, f***ing idiots, but I don't know, maybe this guy is as well. This Trojan made antivirus companies money. Now this really surprised me. I always thought that this happened, but I wasn't really too sure to like what extent. So I found 22 antivirus sales. Zombies were handing over credit cards to hackers. This was the really, really ironic thing. After your machine gets owned and you think you have a Trojan, do not go to an antivirus site on the same computer and enter your credit card. So there's over $2,500 was spent on AV software. Of course, I have all the information. And I thought, man, so this Trojan made antivirus companies money. And also, of course, the humorous web emails to friends saying, help, I have a virus. So many people emailing, you know, like parents emailing their kids, oh, help, you know, my computer keeps downloading things and popping things up, what do I do? That was pretty funny to read, too. Now, at this point, I started to realize, what else do I search for? So how many people search for Paris Hilton? Fucking heaps. Heaps and heaps. The really interesting one, again, is the one at the bottom. I don't get this. So he was at a page searching for shemale, shemale sex, black shemale, shemale movies with the term Paris Hilton. Hey, whatever. Paris Hilton's pretty popular. What about transsexual escorts? So I realized that the internet seems to be used by a lot of people for very, very seedy things. This guy in Australia was visiting cracker.com.au and was flicking between these two profiles. The one on the left is exotic Anna, and the one on the right is the hot Asian transsexual with photos. And he was going to one page, going to the other, and then going back to the first one. And I was like, ooh, you're comparing which one to order. Needless to say, yeah, the IP address of this guy, this zombie, was also in Australia. Which one would you pick? How many people on the right? On the left? All right, so on the right. Yeah, less like a boy. So there are 50 plus zombies searching for hookers or escorts online. I guess that's to be expected. I don't actually really know that people look for hookers online. I thought hookers were on street corners. So I learned something new. That's pretty cool. So where do all these zombies live? I thought to myself, man, I got so many IP addresses. I wonder where they all originate from. So I can do a geographic map with GeoIP library. Basically, I have every zombie source IP address, and I can determine where each IP geographically exists, locates. I then repeat for the next and the next and the next. So have a guess. Who got on the most? What about New Zealand? Okay, so it's a really cram-packed graph. You can see the big spikes. The other ones are actually really low. The next slide will maybe clear things up for you. But so actually, the winner was United Kingdom. United Kingdom had 18,254 IP addresses. United States, close second. 17,798 IP addresses, 23 New Zealand IP addresses, and 2,100 in Australia. So what does that tell you about Australians, apart from they like transsexuals?
We have four computers.
Nice, man, nice. There are 4,200 IP addresses in Turkey. That's quite interesting. Almost 6,000 in France, 7,000 in Germany, and almost 10,000 in Russia. I thought that was actually quite peculiar because, I mean, I would have thought Russians would be quite used to people, you know, exploiting them or ripping them off or doing something. But it appears that Russians actually get owned a hell of a lot, which, yeah. And also, yeah, Kiwis are more secure than Aussies. I mean, 23 IP addresses is f***ing good.
That's your whole internet, isn't it?
Keep it coming, man. Keep it coming. So how much is my stolen data actually worth? So this botnet was designed to steal information. How much was the hacker behind the botnet actually making? So according to recently published semantic stats, this is how much money or how much your personal information is worth. Credit cards are worth 40 cents to a dollar. It's pretty bloody cheap. A USA bank account is $10. A non-USA bank account is $30. So my total, all my credit cards, I got about $150. 61 American bank accounts, I got 610. 48 non-American, I got 1,440. So I stole approximately $3,200 worth of information. I, of course, didn't sell this or anything. I was just curious to know how much information I got. So, I mean, I looked at 6 botnets, and this came from multiple hackers. So these guys aren't making, well, these particular guys weren't making a hell of a lot of money. You would need to have a very, very large network or have someone who's willing to pay a lot more money for your information or maybe have more worthwhile information to steal rather than Bieber accounts and adult friend finder. So what did I learn? This is actually a good thing because I learned a hell of a lot about this. Botnets contain a vast assortment of users. There's government, military, commercial students, kids, doctors, and lawyers. I found multiple hospitals, private health clinics and stuff, people entering client notes, patient notes, all sorts of things. Basically, everyone gets hacked. And everyone around the world gets hacked. I mean, Russians, Germans, French, Australian, American, British, Turkish, Kiwi, Egyptian. Heaps of Egyptians got owned. Brazilians, South Americans. Everyone gets owned. Everyone falls into the same trick. We're all pretty much the same when it boils down to it. And I also learned the 5 things people do online. First thing is they search for porn. There was so much porn in my logs. They buy stuff with credit cards. Everyone seems to shop online. Online shopping, definitely growth industry. Social networking. Practically everyone had a Bieber account, a Facebook, a MySpace, or some variant of this. Webmail, and of course online banking. And also, hackers are using really simple techniques. I mean, this wasn't anything complicated. I would say most people in this room could probably whack up a Trojan similar to this and have something running and do the exact same thing as what these guys did. Wasn't very hard. Your personal information is also not worth a whole lot. You know, if you're going to do this, you need to do it on a very, very large scale for it to actually become very profitable. And also that Google is very, very powerful. I couldn't have found any of this without Google. So using Google to find botnets is relatively original. Using Google to find stored key logs and leaked information from botnets, at least. However, when I first started finding these, I made the mistake of telling my good mate Darren. You may remember him from last year at KiwiCon, who now works at Google. And little do you know, soon later, the Google cache starts removing the entries, specifically for my Trojan that I'm tracking. And I've noticed that now the cache is more actively monitored. You try and look up the cache requests for any of the information that I found, and it says there's no cache available. If you search for the value, you can still find it in the Google index or the Google database of things. So the information is still there. Google have specifically said, do not cache it, or do not render it from the cache. From what I hear, there's actually an internal cache of Google, which you can use to query information sort of unfiltered or unblacklisted. So you can pull out all this information again. And I imagine what Google are doing is trying to remove personal information being cached like this. Because obviously this was... I found some of the botnets I was actually getting the logs from would go down so fast, and the only way I could get the personal information was through Google. So I used Google just to get, you know, everything. So obviously that's not so good. And also, the most important thing I learned was that you can steal large amounts of information on the internet by doing fuck all. I sat at home and clicked Firefox now and again, clicked home, and it just popped up. 4 to 5 hours time investment, and I got hundreds and hundreds of bank accounts. So I thought that was pretty cool. So, recommendations. You should be safe online. The number one hint, or the number one tip I have for everyone, is surf in a protected or virtualized environment. So what I do is I have Firefox or IE sitting inside VMware. You own my browser, I click restore. Done. You know, you can't compromise me out of my VM. Also, if you think you have a virus or a Trojan, do not buy AV using the infected computer. That's pretty f***ing obvious. Disconnect the network port or cable. Either call a professional forensic analyst or format every single hard drive and start again. That's pretty much the only way to guarantee. Okay, so that's the end of that. Round of applause. Come on, Paul. Okay, so my second idea. This is the real money shot idea. I've always wanted my own Trojan. Always, since I was about 12, I've always wanted my own Trojan. Only, I've always wanted an amazing Trojan. I wanted something better than every other Trojan in the world, because everyone else, it will suck. I have to have something great. I wanted a Hollywood hacker Trojan. In the theme of hackers, war games, and swordfish, I wanted something truly amazing. But somehow, you know, I never quite got around to it. I got a job, I started doing real security things. Then I decided, man, it has to be done. I have to do this. So my goal was to write a 100% undetectable Trojan that had to work under both Vista and XP. It had to also contain significant amounts of ninja magic. This means something original. I don't want to do something that someone else has done. I want to have a creative, original thought. I want to be the dude that came up with the new technique, the new trick. So it had to be new. So, without further delay, I present to you the Moth Trojan KiwiCon exclusive release. What do you think? It's amazing! Yeah! Hollywood hacker, bring it on! It's Windows XP! Okay, so I'm a regular, average Joe user. I'm just a person sitting at home. And what I'm going to do is I am going to write a letter in Notepad to my mom. I'm going to say to mom.
Welcome. My name is the Moth Trojan, a next-generation rootkit and KiwiCon exclusive release.
You guys hear?
I do not come in peace. And I have decided to take control of your Windows operating system. By the most awesome hacker in the world, and all your base is not belong to me. Despite my power, I have spawned a remote backdoor in the port 1234 as the user system. Are you feeling scared yet? I am currently stealing all of your private information and sending it to my master. Would you like to hear a joke about Mexicans? We know Jesus was not Mexican. No one could find three wise men and a virgin in Mexico. Ha ha ha. I have now finished stealing your personal information. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, shit! What the hell was that? I was just writing an email and... Alright, so it told me that it launched a back door on... It's that the... Ooh, 1234 is open. Ooh, that's not so good. So there was an open shell listening to the system. I guess I'll just... do what most people do. I run out some antivirus, right? I mean, antivirus probably fine, this thing. So I have the latest, greatest copies of AVG. It's all updated. I'm sure this will find it, and I can remove it. It'll scan it.
D.G, do you seriously think you can find me with an antivirus? Detect. I am not a Hollywood creation. Once again, you have failed to impress me with your antiquated abilities. Fat fingers. I will now close A.B.G and all of its condolence. I grow tired of your futile attempts. This is the reason machines will one day take over the world. You have nothing.
Okay, so, I mean, the next logical step here is that I have a process running on the system. There's something running on my computer as user system, obviously, because it's spawning remote shells. So I'll pop up the task manager, and this should tell me if it's a process. So it should be process, right?
Do you seriously think you will find me using task manager? I have seen typed up here in the back of your computer with a bondage tag on.
Okay. I'm feeling a little more stumped now. Maybe Rootkit Revealer? So Rootkit Revealer looks for any system API calls that have been modified.
I am not a typical rootkit, and you will not find me using Rootkit Revealer. We have no idea, and are grasping at straws. But you have nothing, and you will never find me, because I am smarter than you.
Beaten! Beaten! Maybe, okay, so let me think here logically, because I'm a security guy. This is pretty simple. Maybe it's modifying or affecting every executable on my desktop. Maybe it's added some little loader or a little stub into every executable that's making it talk or, like, sort of customizably say something and close things. Maybe some uber magic like that. So I have Ollie Debug here, of course, my favorite trusted debugger. I'll open that, and then I'll use Ollie Debug to debug one of the executables. And the executable, I should see it running then. Okay, so fire Ollie Debug. Open.
I am sorry, Dave. I cannot let you do that.
Yeah, and, well, I give up trying to find this thing.
I am related to the computer used by Stephen Hawkins, did you know? He calculated his black hole thesis using calc.b, x point b, the same calculator as you. Pity you cannot do anything useful with it.
Yeah, so it just sort of spawns abuse at you and it keeps talking. Also, if I rerun any of these executables, it'll start again, start talking and chattering. It's actually pretty hard to shut up. You guys probably want to know how this works, what the magic secret sauce is. So it's a little convoluted. You're just going to have to stick with me. You have to learn a few things and sort of figure out my trick. Okay, so screw antivirus, call a priest. Help, my computer is suffering from demonic possession. This is the first Trojan, I think, which is verbally abusive. I thought, man, anyone can write a Trojan that steals your keylogs or, like, you know, installs things. No Trojans hurt you personally. Nothing says to you. You got fat fingers. You got nothing. You won't find me. That's better than stealing your bank account. That hurts you. So the big question, what is the moth? Well, in order to really understand what the moth is, you have to delve into some lesser-known Windows functionality. We're going to start with the Windows Management Instrumentation, WMI. WMI is an extension to the Windows Driver Model, WDM. It provides an interface for components to send notifications to other components. WMI is Microsoft's implementation of WBEM, the Web-Based Enterprise Management. WMI has eventing capabilities. So WMI events are raised when anything happens in Windows. And WMI can notify an event subscriber for any raised event. WMI query language, WQL, is used to drive these event queries. So event subscribers are written in managed object format. These are supported under XP and Vista. These are compiled event subscribers, and these are included into the SIM repository. This is your common information model repository. It's held under the system root system32 WBEM directory. Event consumers subscribe to WMI events. Events can originate from many places, from an event provider component, such as a disk quota provider, the power management provider, or the event log provider. These are default shipped with Windows event providers, I think. Now, we also have two distinct types of other events. One is called extrinsic event, and the other one is called an intrinsic event. So an extrinsic event is a predefined event that cannot be directly linked to system change. So an example, an event that describes a computer switching to standby mode is an extrinsic event. An intrinsic event is an event that occurs in response to a change. So a standard WMI event raised when anything happens. So for example, creating a Win32 logical disk will raise an __ instance creation event. Okay, so to put it simply, when you do anything in Windows, you create a WMI event. These events can be subscribed to using event consumers. WMI will forward any raised event to the associated event consumer. Now, event consumers come in two varieties. You have a temporary event consumer. This will only function when the event is loaded by a user and will not survive a reboot. It will actually be flushed out when you reboot your machine. Or you have a permanent event consumer. So a permanent event consumer will survive a reboot, and it works as long as WMI is running and executing. Now, Windows permits 1,000 event consumers per user account and 10,000 event consumers per Windows installation. So Windows comes with a bunch of default event consumer classes. It comes with five predefined event consumers. The ActiveScript event consumer, which will execute a predefined script in an arbitrary scripting language, a log file event consumer, which will write to a log file, an NT event log consumer, which writes to an event log, an SMTP event consumer, which will send an email, and a command line event consumer, which will launch an arbitrary process in the local system context when an event is delivered. So back to my original point, what is the Moth Trojan? The Moth Trojan is malicious managed object format code. It's multiple malicious persistent ActiveScript event consumers. It's 100% VBScript and WQL. It consumes the __ instance creation event. So it subscribes to events created when you run specific executables. It implements the Microsoft text-to-speech ActiveX control. And on Windows XP, this is executed as the user system. This also works on Vista. On Vista, it's executed as network service. Theoretically, though, since network service has SE impersonate privileges, on Vista, you should be able to token impersonate. So I guess everyone remembers Brett's talk from last year, token impersonation, network service to system. So on Vista, you should be able to get system access also. So an example, this is part of the moth. At the very top, we have instance of ActiveScript event consumer. So I create an ActiveScript event consumer, and I give it some script, some arbitrary script. My script is a VB script, which is encoded into managed object format code, which basically has a little function which starts talking, uses the create object speech.voice text, and then it talks. You know, AVG, do you seriously think you can find me with an antivirus scanner? And then I create an instance of an event filter, and the event filter I provide WQL, which I say select star from instance creation event within 5 seconds, where the target instance ISA Win32 process and the target instance name equals the name of the executable I want the event to be triggered on. And then I have a filter consumer binding. So I bind the filter and the consumer together. So the filter at the top, sorry, the consumer at the top and the filter at the bottom. And that's it. It's compiled, it works. And whenever you run avguui.exe, it doesn't matter if you rename Notepad to avguui.exe, your computer will start talking. So installing the moth. Installing the moth requires administrative authority. WMI is actually a core component of Windows. So in effect, the Moth Trojan becomes a core component of Windows. It's like very, very integral in Windows. So to install the Moth Trojan, you run mothconf.exe space mothtrojan.moth. And it basically just does that, compiles it, adds it, stores it, done. So there's not really any real trick to this. Now, writing files to disk. Now, I thought, well, you know, I can have ActiveScript event consumers and execute arbitrary VB script. So what can I do with VB script? What's something really original? So we can use VB script to write executables back to disk. We can actually embed raw binary content inside VB script and write it to disk. So when I ran Notepad up originally and it popped a system shell, what it actually did was I have about 50,000 lines of this text, which is basically the character code for each byte of netcat. And then I use the file system object, the FSO, to open a file, like a standard text file, and I just start writing and splurging all of these bytes to it. And then I close it, then I run it. Standard VB script, I have netcat on disk, I execute it in the system. So this is a really, really cool trick because although the Moth Trojan maybe isn't your cup of tea, when combined with another rootkit, this could be very, very powerful for a method of redeployment. Because you could have another rootkit hidden inside a WMI event that is triggered maybe after the first rootkit is uninstalled. Maybe once a user starts running antivirus software, it reinfects itself as another layer of confusion. It's an excellent method of redeployment. So the Moth Trojan is a unique method of hiding malicious code. As far as I know, this is the first malicious event subscriber ever in the world. Using functionality unknown by most people. But the beauty of this is that I'm using standard Windows Microsoft functionality. This is entirely documented on MSDN. ActiveScript event consumers are nothing new. This is not an O-day. This is not a bug. This is Windows functionality. It's a feature, thank you. That sadly also means that this can't be patched because this exists in Windows. This is Windows. So this is an application-level Trojan, an application-level rootkit. Now, a typical Trojan technique or a typical rootkit technique is getting low. You know, you want to manipulate API calls. You want to manipulate kernel calls or hardware calls. A good example of this is Joanna Retwaska and her now infamous hardware virtualized rootkits. Basically, her trick was that you can hide malicious code so deep that it's impossible to analyze. Now, it's really, really, really deep, really far down there. So the approach that everyone has is you look down when you're trying to find or sort of analyze one of these Trojans or rootkits. My approach is, of course, the complete opposite. I get high as possible. I go straight up. No forensic people actually look up. Everyone's focused on looking down. So I've hidden malicious VB script within Windows in layer 7, way, way, way up here. So while everyone's looking down, you know, you don't see it. So is it really undetectable? It is actually detectable. You can detect it. You can detect it using WMI administrator tools and the WMI event browser download thing, but it's not shipped with Windows by default. You have to go to MSDN, download it, and you'd have to know that you were infected with this to begin with in order to actually go and download it. This is pretty unknown functionality. Who knew about SIM, WBEM, and WMI this morning? All right, how many people knew that you could make your computer talk using it? I came up with this idea a while ago. We had an internal security assessment .com training sort of program, training meeting thing, where we all got together with this really pimp house in Waiheke, and we hacked stuff together. And we had a bunch of really keen, enthusiastic forensic guys. And I thought, man, I would love to give these guys a challenge. So I originally gave the Moth Trojan there. And I gave all of the team a VM with the Trojan running, and I said, dudes, find it. You know, you guys are supposed to be the best in New Zealand, find it. And they couldn't. After 2 hours, they couldn't. The closest person was Adam, who Metalson, of course, who analyzed the memory image of the virtual machine and found the code or found what it was saying in memory. But he didn't really know how it was pieced together or how it was working. He just managed to find it. Yeah, he just looked at me. He did the shortcut, which is actually the best way. And the thing that really got me thinking about this was that there's no forensic methodology that covers malicious WMI event subscribers. No one is actually looking for this stuff in the wild. No one, of course, that is, except securityassessment.com, because, of course, now our methodology includes this. But this is not a common trick. Okay, so what else can you do with the Moth? So how about a Trojan that is launched when the user Joe logs in, but then removed when the user admin logs in? I thought, well, how about a movie-themed speed Trojan when the CPU fan slows down below 100 RPM, it kicks off. So the motherboard, there's an underscore motherboard event provider, which you can subscribe to events, and basically when the fan stops or slows down, you can kick things off. How about a worst day Trojan when your hard disk reports that it's had at least 10 bad sectors, Trojans start running. That'll kind of piss you off. What about infecting your friends? So copying any malicious files to any USB keys you insert, anything like that. Or a rootkit dropper and executor. So I think this is the most powerful usage for this technique, or this technology, is redeploying and reinfecting a machine with another rootkit. Because WMI runs a system, it means you're basically limitless. All you got to do is get code execution as an admin user once, and you potentially have a hook to stay persistent for quite a long time in Windows. Now, on Vista, this totally does work. My demo was originally Vista,
But the real funny thing is that the Vista text-to-speech stutters. It was really funny because it would start talking and just stop. And then like 10 seconds later, talk, and sorry, I just gave up and used XP. Yeah, so source code. This is fully available. You can download it. ha.ckd.net/moth.zip. So that's the end of the Omnibus. Thank you very much. My name's Paul.
And that's it, the Paul Craig Omnibus Experience. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And until next week's show, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks a lot for listening.